We're going to start, and I'm going to ask you, what is the most important aspect of classroom management?
The most important aspect would definitely start with building relationships. If you do not have a rapport with your kids, they are not going to trust or value anything you have to say. So then the question becomes, how do you have that starting right off in September? So for some schools, you have the luxury of knowing what grades you'll be teaching the following year. So like I teach first grade, so I talk a lot with the kindergartners, so they at least know my face and like I say hi to them and things like that. So if you have the luxury of that, that's a good way to build relationships. But if not, which is mostly the case, that first week, don't even try to get to math and reading. You really spend that first week getting to know your students, getting to know what motivates them, getting to know what their triggers are and your triggers as well, because you have to understand you as a person and a teacher. So that first week really, really spent building relationships so that you can put into place procedures and rules and expectations and that students will adhere to them. And because they have that rapport with you, they have more buy-in to it.
So like, what are your go-tos for like, activities? How do you build those relationships right there at the beginning?
Well, when they first come in, we have everyone sit at their lockers. We always start our day with good morning. So the way our room is structured, we do have two teachers. So she'll stand in the hallway and say good morning and give them hugs and things like that. Then they'll come in with their stuff. They'll hand it to me and I will tell them good morning as well. So we start off by just having a simple conversation. How are you? Oh, I love your shirt. Oh, that looks like such a cool, oh, you got your hair done. Something to acknowledge them individually, not just good morning and we keep it moving. As you get to know your students and they will tell you things like, oh, my sister did this or my brother did this, then you can reference back and be like, how's your brother doing? Did that happen? So that comes in due time, but definitely taking that moment to have that even 5 second either conversation or if you're comfortable with hugs or fist pumps or something, to have that individual connection so that students see themselves not as like they see themselves as part of the group, but they also know that you value them as an individual as well.
You mentioned something about knowing yourself as a teacher and as a person and knowing your triggers. Could you explain what you mean by that?
Absolutely. So for some teachers, they are uber organized and it bothers them if a student's binder is messy, per se. For some teachers, they are more bothered by sounds or noises. So if you have kids who are humming or talking, and for some teachers, it's none of those. So knowing what bothers you is how we in turn structure our room. So for me, I am not bothered if your stuff is messy unless you're like Hot Mess Express. Or if you're like, if you occasionally hum or whatnot, that does not bother me. Noise does not bother me, but it bothers the teacher that I teach with. So we had to have a rule that brought back like kind words. And, you know, kind hands and things like that, but also listening ears. And listening ears refers back to like if we, now I'm going off on a loophole. Let's reverse. Okay, so knowing your triggers will allow you to know what rules you need in place basically to keep your sanity. So if it's something that bothers you, you need to have a procedure or a rule or an expectation that will decrease that from students. So if it is, let's say, noising or a messy desk area, one of your rules should be an organized space, because then that will decrease your frustration with that, because it is one of your personal triggers and you don't want that frustration to be monumented because in the classroom. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, I guess I had never thought about that. I think maybe teachers may sometimes do that like unintentionally. Like when you're sitting down and thinking about what expectations and rules you're going to have. Mm-hmm. I need to know that you're listening to me and I need you to be looking at me. And so I always had an expectation of tracking the speaker.
Yes.
And I never even like thought like maybe that's because it bothers me when people are looking at their phone and I'm talking to them, or, you know, if they're looking to the side, I'm like, hey, like we're talking, look at me.
And to go on that wouldn't bother me. Like I have kids who are drawing, I have kids who are standing, I have kids who are staring all over the room. So knowing those triggers, whereas for me, lying is like my pet peeve of pet peeves. So like if a student lies to me, there is immediate consequences. And so like knowing that, I already know like it's a standard across the board, but like you said, the tracking, see, that wouldn't bother me. So knowing those triggers will help you. That's why you have a rule for it. And that's why, yeah. That's why I don't.
I always, yeah, I'm like, and not just when I'm talking, it's like, if we're having a whole class discussion and one of your classmates is sharing, like, I have an expectation, like, your whole body turns to look at the person who's talking, yeah. Because I'm just like, I don't know, are you listening? I don't know, that's the only way I know is if you're looking at the person, yeah, who's talking.
And especially in the age of technology with your middle schoolers, you really have no idea. And I will promise you, I am really looking at you.
No, you're good.
Is it working? So
I know, and I'm like, I'm looking at myself because there's nobody to look at.
I'm so sorry. I don't know why it's not
okay.
Working.
It's okay. It's all good.